Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Fixed Income Conversation Corner podcast series here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Today's conversation will focus on the landscape for residential mortgage-backed securities, or RMBS, including thoughts around investment considerations within this space. Joining us for the conversation today here in our studio at 1285 Avenue of the Americas in New York, glad to welcome back Leslie Falconio, head of taxable fixed income strategy for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. We're excited to welcome from our partners at Angelo Capital Advisors, Clayton Trick. Clayton serves as the head of portfolio management of public strategies for the firm. So with that, Leslie, Clayton, thank you both for spending some time today with our listeners, our clients. Leslie, I'll now pass it over to you to lead today's conversation with Clayton.
Thank you, Dan, and thank you, Clayton, for being here. I mean, I think the timing is just great because we're seeing another shift in the narrative from the Fed. You know, us here are big fans of the securitized product right now, particularly after some of the richness that we've seen in IG corporates. So I do think this is really a perfect time for you to be here. So I do appreciate you taking the time, and thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Leslie. Thank you, Dan. We're looking forward to this conversation. You know, fixed income started to look pretty interesting going into last year, and I think 2024 is going to be an interesting time as well.
Well, you know, we always say, you know, fixed income had such a low volatility for quite some time, so sometimes be careful what you wish for. But for this sector, it's actually, I think, given the volatility, is going to be a benefit. But let's go sort of get right into it. You know, when we think about 2023 and even the range of the 10-year, it went from 3.25 to 5.01, only to end up exactly where it started. So we had a tremendous amount of interest rate volatility in 2023. And as we entered 2024, once again, the market misinterpreted the growth potential and had a recession potentially priced in. You know, we've seen the first quarter data that's come out stronger than what we expected. We have, you know, Atlanta GDP now is about a 2.5. So a lot of our clients are going, well, geez, you know, what happens if we get back to this 5% 10-year treasury yield, particularly, you know, given that we just did a 3.73 in December, you know, how does that impact, say, if we went back to those levels, which just as people know, that's not our call, but you could see it, not necessarily sustainable. But how would that sort of impact RMBS, and how does this high for longer actually potentially impact the sector if, in fact, inflation doesn't trend lower at the pace the Fed would like to see?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Leslie, last year was extremely interesting because to start off 2023, you know, the narrative was the probability of soft landing is extremely low. I mean, if I was in client discussions a year ago and we mentioned that we were, you know, bullish on the U.S. economy and just we would avoid and have a avoid a hard landing, get a soft landing, we'd be kicked out of the office. It's really the U.S. economy has been extremely resilient. You know, we saw a lot of bright spots in the U.S. economy, particularly the homeowner and the consumer in 2023. But there was a big question was, you know, this pace of rate tightening, how restrictive would that be and how quickly could that flow through? And what we found in is the U.S. economy has been extremely resilient. That's kept interest rates higher. As you mentioned, year to date, you know, the 10-year and 5-year yields are higher in 2024. And so we think that's actually a great environment for fixed income investors. If you go, you know, back to the post-GFC period, post-global financial crisis period, interest rates were very low. Anytime there was opportunity to step into fixed income, that gap kind of closed pretty quickly. We think we could be in an environment here where there is an ability to get income for a much longer time period, which is really excellent for investors looking for income over the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, that's great. And as we know, over the long term, it's income that drives total return, not price.
Mm-hmm.
So just to step back very quickly for RMBS, and just that's called residential mortgage-backed securities, from a big picture standpoint, what's the difference between like an agency and a non-agency mortgage, just for our listeners?
Yeah. So for the most part, there are a lot of similarities. And there's been a lot of similarities between agency and non-agency mortgage loans after the great financial crisis due to regulation and investors being more cautious. So agency mortgages are effectively conventional loans that are created across the U.S. where Fannie and Freddie and Ginnie Mae effectively wrap and provide that insurance to bond investors. The non-agency mortgage side doesn't have that wrap, but a lot of those loans do look pretty similar to agency mortgages. From an investor perspective, there's various ways to actually invest in agency and non-agency mortgages that do differ pretty significantly. And the agency mortgage market, you're effectively buying, for the most part, a pool of loans that have that backing. On the non-agency side, investors can be more selective on the type of risk they want to take, be it shorter duration cash flows, longer duration cash flows. They can be a little more specific on the type of collateral, being a new program like or a program in the new issue market like prime jumbo loans, non-QM. There are various ways to access those investment opportunities, and there's ways to find different duration profiles. So we see the non-agency market as being a little bit more dynamic, and in today's environment, actually much higher yielding relative to agencies than we've seen in quite some time.
But you'd agree that the non-agency side just carries a little more risk. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're compensated in that yield.
That's right. Yeah. So because of that lack of Fannie and Freddie or Ginnie Mae implicit guarantee on those loans on the non-agency side, you are have to evaluate credit risk, not just interest rate and convexity risk that you get primarily compensated for in the agency market.
That's right. And that was a great explanation. I appreciate that. So I want to go sort of to the overall housing market right now. Listen, we know, mortgage rate last year was 8%. We know most of 70% or something of consumers have locked in at a 4% and below. So they're, what we called a little bit trapped in their mortgage. And we know affordability has been, not very compelling for many individuals. And as we see this in the housing market, and another caveat is a lot of people, and we're going to get into this a little bit deeper, we also look at, as the Fed or starts to potentially cut, but some, lagging effects that might occur from all these hiking. People think of the great financial crisis. And even though this post-COVID era has nothing to do with financials or leverage or anything like that, when you look at today's market, how do you see the housing market, first off, overall? And secondly, how would these be valued if, say, hypothetically, for some reason, we stayed higher, the home price appreciation not only didn't, trend higher, but it actually, was a deceleration to say, 10%. How do you see that sort of playing out, or what would the impact be?
The U.S. housing market today is in much different shape than it was leading into the great financial crisis, and it's for a few reasons. One is the underwriting standards on newly created loans are very tight. Credit availability in mortgages is extremely tight. And we never got to the level where we had this excess supply, this excess lending in the housing market that we saw leading into the GFC. What it has left with is basically mortgages that have much lower loan to values. And so if you do see a decrease in home prices in the next 12 to 18 months, a flatlining or a decrease, the U.S. mortgage market is much less sensitive to that versus going into 05, 06, going into the financial crisis. One other key factor that's very different in the U.S. mortgage market today versus going into the GFC is basically the amount of fixed rate mortgages that exist. Over 90% of U.S. mortgages outstanding are fixed rate. And so as the Fed raised rates, that had minimal impact and payment shock on those borrowers. Going into the financial crisis, about 40% of U.S. mortgages were floating rate, and they had very short floating rate terms. 1 or 2 year teaser rates. And so as the Fed raised rates before the GFC, that led to payment shock instantly at a time when there was very little cushion in the U.S. housing market. Loan to values were very high. A lot of individuals had second liens on their mortgages that had very little cushion. Now we see a much more cushion in the current market overall. So even though home prices in our view may not rise much from here because of where affordability is, because of how far home prices have come, mortgage bond investors are really well protected to withstand a drop in home prices, and we'll really benefit from an increase in housing velocity because most mortgages are trading at a discount today.
Yeah, I mean, Clayton, I agree with you 100%. I think you bring up some really important points in terms of some of the misconceptions that individuals might have given what happened to the GFC. Now, unfortunately, it was due to a crisis, but let's be honest, the mortgage market, the housing market was, became reformed. It was the first one that had regulations over to after the GFC. Mm-hmm. And I think, particularly to your point, is that when you look back, prior to the GFC, the plethora of mortgage product that individuals had the ability to obtain, which led to substandard underwriting, not quite doing enough due diligence, and let's be honest, people who own several homes that never should have, really sort of snowballed. But I think after that time period, and we can't say that about every product, right? Mm-hmm. That had that kind of regulation. they've really tightened the screws. And to your point, underwriting standards are much tighter. You know, the products that are offered are much narrower. And it's sort of we're in a different scenario now. And I think that not to mention the fact that the consumer's balance sheet is much stronger. So I do think that, and I think you bring up a really great point, that this is a total, completely different era and a completely different, you know, type of environment than what we saw back in GFC. And sometimes good things come out of bad, and I think this is one of them when it comes to RMBS. Mm. So when we say RMBS as a whole, you know, we talked about the agency and non-agency differentiation, which I think is important for our you know, listeners to understand. But, you know, how do you think of when we think about affordability, when we think about the state of the housing market going forward, what's sort of that state of the homeowner? And you brought up the excellent point that most people are locked in at lower rates, which has been great. And as mm-hmm. we know, that's been part of the reason why economists have underestimated consumer spending, because they thought they're assuming that people's principal payments and interest are going to be up 30%, but they're not. Mm-hmm. So they can go out to dinner or go on vacation with that extra money. But how do you see that? How do you see the homeowner sort of right now? If you could just go through that, the health of the home.
Yeah, I mean, the homeowner has done really and executed on a really great plan to basically lock in low fixed rate costs when interest rates were low. About half of America refinanced when mortgage rates were sub 4%, you know, in 2020 and 2021. So this rise in mortgage rates has really not had a large effect on current homeowners. Obviously, it has an effect on new mortgage holders. If someone buys a house today at today's prices, at today's mortgage rates. But overall, the homeowners have locked in low rates, which has given them the ability to continue to spend. We think that's actually one of the reasons that, you know, Fed policy hasn't been as restrictive over the last, you know, 12 to 18 months as they've raised rates so substantially. Is that kind of follow-through effect to the real U.S. economy has been much more gradual. Quantitative easing, where the FOMC has owned so many agency mortgages, has really softened the blow in most of the banking industry. And then on the consumer side, because so many mortgages are fixed rate at such low rates, that softened the blow to the U.S. consumer. And so the U.S. economy has proven to be much more resilient with this hiking cycle. And we think one of the main reasons is because the homeowner is in such good shape. And now that same homeowner that's locked in low rates has seen a rise in the ability for them to use that cash and use those assets to actually generate income. So instead of paying a higher percentage of their having a higher percentage of their kind of overall balance sheet and income statement at the personal level, paying a higher mortgage rate, they're actually able to use those assets to actually generate new income at much higher yields that they haven't been able to do for, you know, since the GFC, before the GFC.
Yeah, and I think that's great, John. I think it just goes into your explanation of the difference between an agency and a non-agency. When we think about the non-agency side, that, you know, ability of the homeowner, the, you know, the strength of the homeowner is actually quite important. When we think about the agency side, given that it pretty much doesn't have very much credit risk, you know, most people are concerned about volatility in the interest rate market. So I do think that's a great differentiation. I completely agree with you that from our perspective, from the agency side, we think they're cheap and we think volatility comes down. And from the non-agency side, we think they're cheap, and we think the homeowner is in a very strong position. So when it comes to both of those sectors, you know, we completely agree in terms of the relative value, particularly given the tightness, how much we've seen investment grade corporates tighten in, and even sectors of high yield. Mm-hmm. So Clay, this has been really great, and I thank you so much for taking the time.
Clayton, Leslie, thank you both again for spending some time with our listeners, our clients here on the Fixed Income Conversation Corner podcast. Today, we have been joined from our UBS Chief Investment Office by Leslie Falconio, Head of Taxable Fixed Income Strategy for the Americas, as well as Clayton Trick, Head of Portfolio Management of Public Strategies. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.